Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today it is June 12th. We are just a couple days away from the start of the College World Series. A very exciting time in college baseball with just eight teams still playing, all with the hope of raising the trophy there at TD Ameritrade Field in just about 2 weeks. So we are going to break down the College World Series field today. And to do that, we have Dave Serrano and Joe Healy joining.
Glad to be back, Teddy. This is an exciting week, getting ready to go to Omaha like the other eight teams, and there's no better time of the year than this, the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Omaha's here, excited about it, ready to take it all in. The baseball is great, obviously. That's the showstopper, but I'm also just excited for everything around the College World Series. I'm excited to walk through the baseball village. I'm excited to see all the tailgating setups out there. I'm excited to sweat through my shirt within 15 minutes of getting out of my car. All of that kind of stuff. It all makes the College World Series what's great about college baseball.
Yeah, it's a wonderful time. If you haven't gone, what are you doing listening to this podcast? In some respects, but in other respects, I know it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, frankly. You know, you have to get to Nebraska. While it's an easy drive for Joe and some folks in that part of the country, you know, it's not the easiest to get to. But if you go, you will be. It will be a very enjoyable experience. Omaha, the city, you know, really does a great job putting its best foot forward and welcoming in everyone during the event. And obviously the baseball is very high level and it's very exciting with the stakes that everyone is playing for. And it's a fantastic event, as you know, pretty much anyone that has gone, you know, seems to agree that I kind of hate the term bucket list, but, you know, if you have one, Omaha probably deserves to be on it. So this year, if you go, or if you're just going to tune in on ESPN, you will see a pretty interesting field. It wound up being rather chalky, and, you know, that's even with 2-3 seeds making it in Florida State and Michigan. You know, the eight teams, you've got Michigan, Vanderbilt, Auburn, Florida State, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Louisville, and Texas Tech. Now, all of those teams were ranked in our preseason top 25, as were all eight teams that they beat in Super Regionals. The eight teams that are in Omaha were all ranked in the top 20. Michigan was number 20. Vanderbilt was preseason number one. So it's been a pretty chalky year. If the tournament hasn't been incredibly chalky, it's been rather chalky as a tournament too. But what stands out to you guys as the biggest surprise to this point, considering that we figured going into this year that all of these teams were going to be pretty good?
You know, there's a couple storylines here. First of all, I think we talked a lot about, was it going to be a chalky kind of year? And sure enough, it ended up being that way, even though with the 2-3 seeds getting in. But the storylines for me are what Michigan did to what I felt, and I bragged about what I felt was the most well-rounded team in the country in the UCLA Bruins. But kudos to Coach Backetts. That, you know, they may have been a 3 seed and they may have had their struggles at times in the Big Ten, but watching Michigan on TV, that's a good baseball team. And it wasn't as much of an upset as people may think, because that is a good baseball team with good pitching and good athletes. The Florida State story is a Cinderella story, even though it's not a Cinderella program. I am so happy for 11 and Coach Martin in the fact that he gets to end his career in Omaha, that he spent many days in, 17 years there, and just a fabulous story of that team putting him on their back and just carrying him into Omaha in a spectacular fashion. To go into Baton Rouge and win 2 games in that atmosphere is remarkable, to be honest with you. And then, kind of like we talked last week, really happy for Butch Thompson and Auburn, the Auburn Tigers. It hasn't been a very clean year for them in regards to injuries and everything, all the adversity they've gone through, what they had to overcome last year, and the fact that that they got left on the field by a ball that hits the right fielder's glove and goes over the fence against Florida. And to get to the College World Series for the first time in many, many years is a great story. And just, I think just a lot of, and Arkansas returning after having a tough loss on a missed pop fly with one out to go to win the national championship. Dave Van Horn gets his team back. So I think there's some great stories, along with the fact that Vanderbilt is loaded and they've got there. It's a great setup for a 2 weeks of exciting, good college baseball.
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing to me is Auburn being here, and not that they're wasn't the talent for them to be here. It's kind of the way they've arrived here. We talked about it a little bit last week. They've just been so banged up, and they've had to win games ugly, and they just kind of continue to do that in Chapel Hill. They still don't know what they're going to get from Tanner Burns, for example. And, you know, they go into that game three kind of wondering, and then they score what is 13 runs in the first inning. So what's impressive to me about that in the abstract, though, is that they got to Omaha in a year when things didn't go quite right. And I think if you're going to become the type of program that challenges to get to Omaha, year to year and try to get there, you know, kind of do what Texas Tech has done, right? Where Texas Tech is going for, you know, the fourth and sixth years or what have you. I think you have to get in sometimes when things didn't go quite right. If you're waiting around for this one class of players to kind of grow up and together and get better together and kind of crest as juniors and seniors, that's right, putting a lot on one team. So can you get to Omaha when things don't necessarily go your way and the conditions aren't just perfect for you to do so? It's always impressive when programs are able to do that. Auburn was a team that was under 500 in the regular season in the SEC. And here they are going to Omaha with a record that's not quite as good as we expect from teams going to Omaha, you know, 38-26. I mean, they've taken some losses this year. They've taken on some water and they survived it. And, you know, they got put on on the tougher side of the bracket. Vanderbilt, Louisville, and Mississippi State are waiting there for them. That's going to be a real tough thing for them to work their way through. But I don't know. At this point, I think this is a pretty tough team. I think it's a team that just has a lot of belief. And even if it is a relatively quick stay in Omaha, I can guarantee you those games are going to be hard fought. And Auburn's going to do what they can to do what they've done all along, which is just kind of stay alive, fight, and give themselves a chance in the end.
Yeah, I liked Auburn a lot coming into the year, but that was based on the fact that Tanner Burns and Davis Daniel were at the top of the rotation, and Daniel pitched on opening weekend and hasn't pitched since, had surgery after the year, of course, and Burns has been banged up for the last, I don't know, 6 weeks, and Jack Owen emerged early in the season, and then he missed a couple starts, so the offense, they have no one has double digit home runs, no one is hitting 300, but Auburn persists. And this is the third year in a row now that Auburn has overachieved in the postseason with Butch Thompson at the helm. If you go back to I guess that was what, 17, they nearly won the Tallahassee Regional in a year that they were not expected to do so. In 18 last year, they won the NC State Regional going on the road to do so and very nearly upset Florida in Gainesville then. And then this year, they aren't supposed to be in Omaha. They probably weren't. If you just look at it, they should not have come out of the Georgia Tech Regional. You wouldn't have thought they wouldn't have made it out of Atlanta as banged up as they went in there. And here they are, and they're playing with an incredible amount of belief. I also think, like Dave said, what Arkansas has done this year to be able to bounce back, there were a lot of people wondering just what the mental state of the Razorbacks would be after they lost the World Series the way that they did a year ago. And I made it pretty clear on this podcast and in other platforms that I just wasn't sure that they had the complementary pieces to replace what they lost from last year. And they have absolutely shown that they do. And, you know, now they enter this year's College World Series, much like they did last year, with a very legitimate chance to go win a national title. And I think that those two teams especially kind of stand out. I mean, what Michigan has done to bounce back has been somewhat surprising and definitely impressive. But at the same time, I never doubted their talent. It just wasn't coming together consistently. And You know, it finally did, and they went out and became the first team to beat UCLA in a series all season, which is a huge surprise in itself. But you know, it is a talented team there in Ann Arbor, and it's going to be interesting to see them on the big field at TD Ameritrade. So as we go into this, it looks like Vanderbilt is the clear favorite. They're the highest remaining seed. They're the SEC champs. They lead the nation in wins. They have an unbelievable array of talent, especially on the hitting side, but also on the pitching side. We just saw Kumar Rocker throw a no-hitter, strike out 19 batters on Saturday against Duke in an elimination game for the Commodores. They've really been pretty red hot for at least 6 weeks, 2 months. So they look like the favorites. Who do you think can challenge the Commodores, as favorites as we go into this?
I'm going to Omaha to see what I think is a pretty open field. I love the Vanderbilt team, and who doesn't, you know, especially the way, you know, they've consistently hit all year and their pitching's coming on as of late. But I think it's a wide open field. I really do. I think Arkansas has a chance to get back to the national championship game. What Florida State has done, and, you know, I mean, what would be better for college baseball for Mike Martin to get into the national championship game and win it all? Would that not be the greatest story of all time for a coaching legend to do that? But I think it's an open field. Obviously, Vanderbilt will be the favorite, especially now with the Bruins out of it. But I think there's going to be some interesting things that happen over the next 2 weeks. And it might not be as chalky as the regionals and super regionals were when it's all said and done.
I actually like Mississippi State a little bit. And they're on that side of the bracket. So they're going to get a look at them probably early. If things go chalk, they'll get them in that their second game.
I think you also, that's interesting with Mississippi State, just having seen them during Supers, they're rolling again. They look great, and they absolutely are going there only to win a national title. Jake Mangum is pretty determined to go out on top and to be a part of the team that finally brings a title back to Starkville. But I think when you look at that half of the bracket, it looks a little tougher with Vanderbilt and Louisville looming in a potential winner's bracket game. On the other side, it looks a little more open with Florida State and Michigan being on that side. And so Arkansas's path to the finals feels a little bit easier than some of these other teams. And that's not to discount what's happening right now with Florida State and Michigan, who both have absolutely proven over the last 2 weeks what they're capable of. If you weren't sure about it before, you should be now. And Texas Tech is a really, really good team themselves. But I think that half does look a little easier, and Arkansas does appear to be the favorite on that side. And so I think you have to like what the Hogs could pull off here if they're able to, you know, if they are able to get through and they look like the favorites on that side, then you just have to win a three-game series. And, you know, that at that point, the path there is just easier for them. So I think when you look at Arkansas's offense, when you look at the fact that Isaiah Campbell, you know, is at the front of that rotation and Matt Cronin's at the back of the bullpen, I think that they have to be looked at as a very serious contender for the national championship again this year. And I'll be interested to see how that all shakes out. But I saw a Vegas line that had them and Vanderbilt just about the same. And I believe that's because they're looking at Arkansas as having the easier path to the finals. And if that comes to fruition, an Arkansas-Vanderbilt finals, that would be quite fun. We have seen that already this year. It was in Nashville, and Vanderbilt won it. But I would be foreseeing that again if it happened. Now, mentioning all of these SEC teams, there are four of them there. Three of them are from the SEC West. We knew this year that the SEC was the best conference, but how impressive is it that what the SEC West has done this postseason and in getting three teams to Omaha? Joe, what do you make of that?
No, I mean, it's incredibly impressive, and it's just kind of the continuation of of what we've seen with what the SEC has accomplished from a baseball standpoint for a long time. There's a piece on baseballamerica.com now, J.J. Cooper did. There's a little plug there. There's a little synergy.
Wow, way to suck to your boss.
it's really interesting. So, it's got some kind of colorful charts and graphs here, which are, visually interesting, but talks about how, the SEC has averaged, this century 2.3 teams in Omaha, which is about 29% of Omaha representatives. So, obviously, getting 50% is a pretty big jump there, but when you consider they're really just jumping from, two and change to four. But it just kind of goes to show that as much talk as there is, and we get this, and other publications get this, commented and on Twitter and what have you, that the SEC is overrated and there's SEC bias and so on and so forth. Look, the proof is in the pudding. I don't know what else we could say. I mean, these teams earned their way here. Nobody got a bye into the College World Series. They've all had to prove it, and they're all here. And I think going back to what Auburn has accomplished, I think that's a great example of just how difficult that conference is. That team was under 500, and all they've done is gone and won a regional at the number three national. Whether you thought Georgia Tech was supposed to be, should have been the number three national seed or not, they went and won that regional on the road, then went on the road in Chapel Hill and took two out of three against North Carolina to earn their spot here. And I think that really kind of goes to show just how difficult that conference is, that team in particular, even with all the challenge they had, ended up under 500 in the regular season, and here they are. So it's just this is college baseball for you now. The SEC is just an absolute gauntlet, and getting out of the SEC just to get into the postseason is in some ways just as much of a challenge as getting to this point once you're in the postseason.
Dave, you competed there. What do you make of what the conference has become?
Well, there's no doubt. I agree with what Joe said. I think what happens is when the SEC teams get to the regionals and they get to the super regionals, they've been so battle tested throughout the year. I've said this in my 6 years there, that 30 game schedule of SEC games is the biggest grind, and every win, no matter how ugly it is in SEC play, is a good win. And I think that the battle tested teams, it's proven that. And sometimes I don't mean this disrespectfully by no means, but it's almost like when you get to a regional or super regional, it may be a little easier than it was in a weekend series. There is four teams out of the SEC that didn't make a regional that I would say you could put into a regional, and they may have made it out of a regional. That's how tough it is through that conference. And it's I know it bothers people around the country to hear all the time, but there's no doubt they are the cream of the crop. And there's many reasons for that. Not just the talent, not just the teams, not just the coaching, but the venues they play in. And there's a reason why their percentage of getting teams to Omaha each and every year is so high and so consistent.
So now, speaking of some of the other parts of the country and that may not appreciate what the SEC has become, the West Coast. And there are no West Coast teams in the field this year. UCLA got upset in super regionals. Stanford went on the road and lost it to Mississippi State. Obviously, Oregon State got upset in the regional round, going 0-2. And the rest of the Pac-12 didn't have such a great showing themselves. None of the mid majors were able to make it out. And what we're left with is, for just the second time in College World Series history, no one from the West is coming to Omaha. Dave, what does it mean that that's happened this year, especially in a year where at times it looked like the Pac-12 had three real solid national title contenders in Stanford, Oregon State, and UCLA, and did have the number one overall seed in this tournament in the Bruins?
It's disappointing, to be honest with you. It's disappointing for the West Coast. It's not good for the West Coast, by no means. And it's not a coincidence that may be the reason why there's so many jobs more than anywhere else in the country that are open on the West Coast right now and are being closed by new head coaches and staff. I'll even go a little bit farther of a team you didn't mention, UC Santa Barbara, who was a team that was being talked about as a national national seed as of maybe 2 weeks with the left in the season, and they go 0-2 in their regional. That's disappointing for them, disappointing for the Big West Conference that has represented their conference in Omaha quite a bit over the last 10 years. So it is disappointing. There's probably a lot of reasons why they're behind some other conferences in the country. A lot of it is finances. But, you know, and I'll say this. I'll say this is a little bit of a crutch to the West Coast. I'll use Stanford for an example. You know, they got suited in a regional with four California teams. They were lucky to get out of it. But it is a little tougher. It is a little tougher because they don't get spread around the country as much. But the bottom line is they had an opportunity this year, and no one came out of it. And it's a hole that the Big West has to get out of, because they're falling behind a lot of other people around the country. And we all know there's a lot of talent out there in California, but a lot of kids will start to venture out to other schools around the country if they don't see more teams getting to Omaha. Because the ultimate thing when a kid goes to a college to play baseball is, one, get an education, but also to play in Omaha. So those teams need to battle through this and get back out there.
So, Joe, you know, our friend Aaron Fitt made a comment on Twitter on Sunday night. He was watching, you know, the games in UCLA and in Starkville, and he compared them, it was like when he was watching the games in LA, it looked like a James Taylor concert, and when he flipped to Starkville, it looked like an AC/DC concert. And while I don't actually relate to those bands because I'm not as old as Fitzy is, I do understand the point that he's trying to make. And you were doing the same thing that he was doing. What did you think of the disparate atmospheres and you know, just what that plays into when we're making comparisons, when kids are making comparisons, recruits and all like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a stark difference. I saw the tweet you're referring to, and I actually, kind of nodded my head in agreement, you know, sitting there on my own, because I felt the same way, flipping back and forth, that it was quite the difference. And I think that kind of stuff matters, you know, to your point. I mean, when, you know, if you're taking a, you know, if you're a kid who has the opportunity to play it, you know, a Mississippi State versus UCLA, just to use the example that was tweeted about. And you're going on visits to some of these schools that are during a weekend series. I mean, which one is going to stand out to you from that standpoint? I know there's a lot of other factors that go into it. It's not just that, but, you know, it'd be hard to pass up, you know, an opportunity to go play at Mississippi State with the way Duty Noble rocks, not just this time of year, but really all year. That place is packed out and loud and a great atmosphere. And it's not just there. It's, you know, Fayetteville and Oxford and Baton Rouge and, you know, a lot of different places in that part of the country. So it is quite a difference. But, you know, this is obviously a much larger conversation than just this podcast and just college baseball in general. I think that's kind of true in college sports across the board. I mean, even the West Coast programs, now I don't want to get too out of my depth here because I'm not, you know, in the same way that I follow college baseball, I do not follow college football and basketball quite as closely, but I do follow those sports. And it's my perception of it that, you know, for as good as Stanford has been in football under David Shaw, that it's just not the atmosphere that you get in other parts of the country for programs that have been similarly successful. So some of that, I think, is just like a college sports culture thing, depending on where you are in the country. So I think that's kind of what plays in here as much as anything else. But it does kind of draw, you know, that's a comparison you draw. And that's one of the areas where, as Dave alluded to, where the West has perhaps fallen behind a little bit is, you know, kind of in the investment piece, whether that's facilities or what have you. I think that's where you can see that stark difference. Because even just the stadiums, you know, you look at Duty Noble, and I know that's the grandest example in college baseball, but, you know, you look at that versus Jackie Robinson Stadium at UCLA, and it's just, there's really no comparison there. So my other thought here, just real quick, is I've seen a lot of kind of 2020 hindsight stuff talking about, well, UCLA wasn't as good as we thought they were. And okay, maybe they weren't number one with a bullet like we thought they were for the entirety of the season. Maybe that was a little bit much there, and maybe they just weren't being challenged like we thought maybe they were. But let's stop short of saying that they were some sort of fraudulent team there. I mean, you look at the talent there, you look at the kids they had drafted, you look at how many games they won. I mean, they didn't lose a series all year, for goodness sakes. During the regular season, that team was really, really good. So let's not kind of, and this is to those on, you know, social media and what have you, I'm not obviously speaking to you two, but I saw a lot of that after UCLA got eliminated and Stanford as well. And, We need to stop short of that. Just stop with that. Those teams were very, very good. They had bad weekends, and maybe they weren't quite as good as we had thought they were, but it's not like these two teams were just complete frauds going into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I generally hate making comparisons between regions. I just think that there are so many factors that go into it. Obviously, the West Coast generally just gets all bunched together, but, you know, it's different than in the Southeast, where you have both the SEC and the ACC can be called Southeastern conferences. You know, those are two major, major conferences. The West has the Pac-12. That is it. You know, the Big West is not on the same level as those other three conferences that I've mentioned. And, you know, it's a great baseball league. And then the West Coast Conference is a great baseball league itself, but it's also not the Big West. And so you have these like striations out there. And, you know, then there is the Mountain West, but, you know, as a baseball league, it's probably not on the same level as those other two. And there just are fewer schools out there, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that this has only happened twice in the history of the tournament does seem rather significant. I don't know that it's a trend in any way, but it does seem rather significant that the West was shut out this year, especially in a year where it looked like they had real national title contenders. And, you know, maybe given a different draw, Stanford, you know, gets there. And, you know, just going to Starkville was always going to be very difficult for whoever got that draw in a super. You know, UCLA just wins one more game and they're there and we aren't talking about this. So it the margins are very slim here, and that's certainly a part of this. But I do think that considering that this has only happened now twice, it is something that is disconcerting for the Pac-12 especially, but really for the West as a whole. And, you know, when you look at it from a broader sports perspective, you know, the Pac-12 now this year didn't have a team in the college football playoff, didn't have a team in the Final Four, and doesn't have a team in Omaha. And for a conference that's taken a lot of hits, for a conference that is looking for a cash infusion to get itself back on the same level as the rest of the Power Five until its TV contracts come up again in a few years, I mean, this is not a good position for it to be in. And I'm not saying anything that is new here at all, but it's now leaking into baseball. If it wasn't before, it now clearly is. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. And like Dave mentioned, there have been several coaching changes. USC's coaching chain has an open job. Oregon just hired Mark Wasikowski from Purdue, and Washington State hired Brian Green from New Mexico State. So it'll be interesting to see if any of those guys can make a breakthrough and what happens at other places where, you know, they're trying to get back to the level that they're accustomed to, like in Arizona State. Or that's the West Coast. Let's talk about the team that beat UCLA, and that was Michigan. They are going back to Omaha for the first time since 1984. The Big Ten is back in Omaha for just the second time in like 35 years. And they do it with, it was the Big Ten favorite, but it wasn't the team that was necessarily playing the best coming into the tournament from the Big Ten. They'd kind of scuffled down the stretch. But Joe, what do you make of the fact that the Big Ten is back, and what do you make of this Michigan team, what they've been able to do over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, for Michigan, it's just been kind of a realization of the potential that we knew they had. I mean, when we talked in our preseason top 25 meetings, which seems like, I don't know, 6.5 years ago now, you know, we kind of were effusive in our praise of this Michigan team. And I kind of seem to remember us talking about, you know, they might should be higher, but just kind of wondering if, you know, some of the things like having to go on the road early, stuff like that might force them to take some lumps early, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, so long story short, we were pretty high on them. So I think this is kind of just the realization of that potential that it took them a while to come around to. So, you know, so it's kind of nice to see that, because it kind of validates what we thought about that team coming into the year. For the Big Ten, I think it's huge. And there's been some hand-wringing is maybe too strong a word, but, you know, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star reached out to me a couple weeks ago, and we chatted a little bit on the phone for a piece he did. I think actually just went up, so check that out. Kind of on, you know, where does the Big Ten, I mean, it was through the lens of Indiana University because that's who he covers, but where does the Big Ten kind of go from here? His point was kind of that it felt like the Big Ten had plateaued a little bit ever since hitting that peak of, you know, 2013, 2014, 2015, when Indiana gets to the College World Series and then gets a top eight seed. And then the next year, Illinois is a top eight seed. And I hadn't really given it too much consideration and thought of it that way, but I think he's kind of right. And so kind of what we were spitballing is, Ward, is that where do they go from here? And I think the short version is just keep doing what you're doing, because the league is doing all the right things. The investment is there. We've talked about that a lot, you know, the facilities and the coaches that are in the league now. And I think it says a lot that Mark Wazikowski, frankly, just to touch on that real quick, you know, it was a West Coast guy, but then took a job at Purdue because he saw the potential of that program in the Big Ten, knowing that, you know, I don't have to sit and hang out here on the West Coast to get other opportunities. I can go coach at Purdue and win there, and he did, and get those opportunities. I think that's a big thing for the league, something like that happening. So in all the ways that a league needs to put itself in position to have success, the Big Ten has done that. So that's kind of the short version, is I don't think there's too much reason for panic. But going beyond that, you know, Zach and I talked about, you know, the league kind of has to go together, because right now I think it kind of feels like, I think it would be easy to dismiss that success Indiana had because, well, okay, that team had Sam Travis and Kyle Schwarber and Aaron Slagers and a whole bunch of guys who made it, you know, high in the minor leagues and were really, really talented players. You know, I think Travis and Schwarber get kind of the headlines there, but that pitching staff was really pretty ridiculous. So the talent there was just so unbelievable. I think it's easy to kind of dismiss that as, well, that was, you know, Tracy Smith did a really good job stockpiling talent there and it kind of all came together. That's kind of a one-off, if you will. I think it'd be easy to do that. But now it's a little bit harder to do that with the Big Ten because you have had what Indiana did, and now you've got Michigan back. And then you can kind of start to look at the full picture and say, okay, maybe, you know, maybe this league is finding another gear. So I think it's big in that regard. I mean, coming back around to my original point, maybe there was that little bit of a plateau there, but now you can point to two programs who have gotten to the College World Series, a couple of others in Minnesota last year and Illinois in 2015 who came really, really close. That's four different programs just in the last 6 years from 2013 until now who have either gotten to Omaha or have come within one or two wins of doing so. And that's absolutely huge for the conference.
Dave, what kind of growth have you seen from the Big Ten? You know, really just since you got to Tennessee and just over the last 8 years, it seems like there's been some pretty significant growth happening in that conference.
I think it's huge. And I think it starts with the recruiting and, you know, obviously they're keeping more guys, you know, they're going down south and getting guys and they're keeping the guys. There's some good, you know, in the Big Ten, there's some good baseball in those states and they're keeping some of those guys from going south and they're pulling some guys from the south and they're going out west and getting some guys. It's been huge growth. And as Joe was talking, I was just kind of thinking about hearing the numbers he was putting up of, you know, you talk about as northern as you can get in this country in the Big Ten, and to see the success, you could go down the list some. You know, Illinois is the team that we didn't talk about that had a good team this year. So I think the Big Ten has made huge strides in regards to college baseball. And it's funny, we're talking about this right after we talked about the West Coast and how they've kind of split a little bit. I think the Big Ten is going the other direction, and I think they're only going to get better. I mean, they're going to continue to get better and build off the success of what people around the country are seeing they're doing. Because let's be honest, it's for student athletes, it's a great education at all those schools in the Big Ten. So that's an attraction right there. Now, if their teams are being shown on TV more and are showing up in Omaha, it's going to make the Big Ten a tough no for a recruit to say if they're being recruited by them. But yeah, huge strides of what they're making to get up with the Joneses of the world of college baseball. And I'm not saying they're there yet, but they're a lot closer than they were 5 to 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about just keeping guys, John Morosi, noted Michigan alum, tweeted this morning that of the Wolverines' top 11 hitters in terms of at-bats, eight are from Michigan, Illinois, or Wisconsin. And among the pitchers in innings pitched, the top five, four are from Michigan. There's talent there. And honestly, The fact that Wisconsin doesn't have baseball has really benefited several teams in the Big Ten, maybe no one more than Michigan, who has gotten very successful not only at keeping kids in Michigan, but at keeping Wisconsin kids in that general area. They've been very successful at mining those two. And you know, Michigan recruits nationally with Eric Backich. Jesse Franklin, one of their best players, is from Seattle. They consistently go out west for junior college players, especially, and you know they have inroads elsewhere. But you know, so a great job by Backich and Nick Schnabel to put that team together and to look nationally. But there is talent in the Midwest. You know, I've probably talked about it on the podcast before. I certainly talk about it on Twitter all the time. Ohio high school baseball is amazing, and I say that as a native Clevelander. But it goes beyond that. I mean, what the kids are doing in Indiana, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Illinois, you know, those kids can compete. And for a long time, those kids just left. You know, for the kids that stay, they're becoming more numerous, and you know they really can help propel these teams in that area of the country further. And as the schools commit more resources to it, you know, you're seeing success. And when people ask me why has the Big Ten gotten better, I mean that's really my simplest answer is they have the money and they're spending it on baseball now, whereas in the past they might not have. And so what you're seeing is the fruits of all of that. And I think it's great that Michigan had this breakthrough, and now we'll see where the rest of the conference takes it from there. There are interestingly two Big Ten jobs open, or three Big Ten jobs open right now. Purdue, Nebraska, and Rutgers, and only one of those you would describe as the top half of the Big Ten job. Nebraska's very certainly that, and it'll be very interesting to see what they do. But Purdue and Rutgers are trying to break into that still, and you know, Purdue's had a taste of it a couple times in the last decade, winning a Big Ten title and finishing second. And you know, I'll be very interested to see how they replace Waz. You know, just where they turn, how much they're going to commit to a new coach, and how much they want to still be good at baseball. That's a place that build a stadium and has been successful there. So I think there's a lot of growth potential still for the Big Ten. Let us revisit our national championship picks. Dave and I, the last time we did this on the podcast, both picked UCLA, so we need new ones. Joe, you picked Vanderbilt. Are you still riding with Vanderbilt?
I am. I don't know if you guys saw, but Kumar Rocker threw a 19 strikeout no hitter. So I feel pretty good about that right now.
Dave, where are you turning now that UCLA is out?
I'm torn. I really like Vanderbilt's team. They're the obvious choice, as we've talked about. But as I said, some unusual things I feel could happen. It's hard to go away from Mississippi State. I hear you guys loud and clear. I think that senior leadership is going to propel them, and I'm gonna switch, and I'm gonna go with the Bulldogs. The Mississippi State Bulldogs win the national championship.
After what I saw in Starkville this weekend, I'm really in no position to say no to that. But I am going back to my original national championship prediction way back in January when I picked Florida State to win the whole thing. Said it was a sentimental pick at the time. It kind of remains so. But at the same time, Florida State's on a 6-game winning streak. They're playing about as well as anyone. Whatever they've found is working right now, whether it's just a looseness, you know, now that they're in the tournament, whether it's that they're playing for 11, whatever they're doing, it's working. And, CJ Van Eyck is a guy that you need to watch for in the 2020 draft. He's a definite first round contender, first top half of the first round contender, really. And so that gives them an absolute stud in the rotation. Drew Parrish is very experienced, and I think he'll like pitching in the big park of TD Ameritrade. JC Flowers at the back end of the bullpen is pretty locked down, and they have a lot of talent up and down that lineup. I really like what Drew Mendoza is doing right now. Obviously, he hit the walk-off to send them to Omaha, but it's not just him. There's a lot of talent in the lineup. And, like I mentioned before, they're on what I would consider to be the easier side of the bracket. So they have a little bit of a simpler path potentially. So I am I'm going with Florida State. I'm going back to it, and we're going with Mike Martin going out in absolute style, winning his first national championship after a stupendous, just legendary 40-year career there at Florida State. So we will find out in 2 weeks if any of us was right. Probably none of us will be. That's generally how baseball works. Before we get out of here, I wanted to also mention that this week at baseballamerica.com, we released our College Player of the Year award. We announced Adley Rutschman as the College Player of the Year, to the surprise of, I'm sure, exactly nobody. Our All-America teams can also be found at baseballamerica.com. All of that will be in the July issue of Baseball America. If you are a subscriber or if you want to go out and pick that up, you can find all of that there. But guys, Adley, his college career came to a shockingly early end when Oregon State got eliminated in the regional. He then was made the number one overall pick in the draft by the Orioles. He is now wrapping up the award circuit with not only our Player of the Year award. We'll find out about Golden Spikes pretty soon here, whether he won that or not. But when you look back at Rutschman's career, what stands out to you the most about what he was able to accomplish during his 3 years at Oregon State?
I think he's a coach's dream. As a coach that's coached many players, I think every coach wishes they had someone like Adley. Not only is it makeup-wise, I think the makeup may be off the chart even more than the ability, and the ability is off the chart. It's you know, to know that he won a national championship last year is deserving. It's disappointing for me because you want to see players like that in Omaha again. I think the best players deserve to get to finish their careers in Omaha, but he won a national championship. But I just think he'll be recognized. You know, he'll be in the big league soon. I think very soon, once he gets through all his circuit of all the awards and all that, when he gets going, I think it's a tribute to him of what he brought to college baseball, and what for any youngster that's watching the game, just to watch the way and put his talent aside, the passion and the kind of teammate he was as a player. And I think any young player that's watched him over his 3 years at Oregon State could only have learned the right way of playing the game. But congratulations to him, and I wish him the best. And he's been a great player and a great person for college baseball.
Yeah, I guess it's only fair if I shouted out something JJ wrote earlier in the podcast, that I shout out something Teddy wrote on Adley Rutschman in the latest edition of the magazine. And go out there and pick up a magazine. Do it. Fantastic read. So Teddy hit on this. This is not new ground I'm going to cover here, but it's what stands out to me, and that, you know, when he was a freshman, he was not a particularly effective offensive player. And that's, you know, freshman in a major conference. There is an illustrious line of players who have had struggles as a freshman and have gone on to be productive. But I think very few, I would imagine, without having looked at an exhaustive history of all these players, I would imagine that it's a much smaller list of players who have gone from really kind of struggling in a lot of ways offensively as a freshman to being, you know, one of the truly elite offensive producers over the next 2 years. But his jump from freshman to sophomore year, and then again, you know, in some ways from his sophomore to junior season, has really just been incredible. It's a transformation from that side of the ball that, you know, you just don't see very often. And, you know, I remember when he was a freshman, hearing a lot of talk about, boy, if the bat ever comes around, you know, he's an elite defensive catcher. He has all the skills back there. You know, if the offense ever comes around, that's kind of just gravy. And well, that's probably been the best tasting gravy that a college coach has ever been able to taste, because I mean, he's just been, absolutely incredible in all facets of his game since then. But, just the transformation he made offensively stands out to me the most, for sure.
Yeah. I think, Adley's just been such an incredible player. And, you know, I think back to that 2017 season when we were trying to figure out freshman All-America awards. Rutschman was clearly this amazing defender on a team that had, you know, that won 56 games, that was just clearly the best team in the regular season. And but he only hit something like 250. And, you know, trying to jam him on to a freshman All-America team proved to be impossible, that there were other catchers that we needed to honor. And to think that kid that we couldn't get on a freshman All-America team because he only hit what he hit and now has become the best hitter in college baseball, the number one overall pick, that it's an incredible transformation. It's what I wrote about in the piece Joe is alluding to. My idea going into when I was sitting down to write that story and doing all the work leading up to that, wasn't really necessarily to write about Adley's offensive transition or transformation. It just, I kept coming back to it, that what he was as a freshman was a really, really, really good player, but it was also more of a role player on an outstanding team. And what he became then the next year on the national championship team, on a team with three top 40 picks itself in that draft, he was already the best player on that team as a sophomore. And the transformation was quick, and it was amazing to watch. And we're all going to miss having Rutschman in the game next year. I mean, he just is, a fantastic representative of Oregon State, of college baseball, of what you would want just a student athlete to be. And I think he's going to do amazing things in pro ball. And I'm just glad that we got to see it for 3 years in college, that he did go to school, and that he played such a prominent role in some very significant teams here over the last 3 years. And I'm like Dave, I'm a little disappointed we won't get to see him in Omaha, but I am excited to see who has the kind of impact that Rutschman did a year ago, who makes that impact this year, and then who makes that jump into stardom. I think we saw Kumar Rocker kind of do that already in super regionals with that 19 strikeout no hitter. But maybe an Austin Martin on that same Vanderbilt team can do it. Maybe it's someone else. You know, I think in college baseball, we're pretty aware of Casey Martin and Heston Kerstad, but they have another level they can get to still, I know. And, there are countless guys around the country, Jordan Westberg at Mississippi State. We could go through someone from every team, and I don't know. We tried to make a stab at predicting who it would be when the tournament started, but now we're going to find out, who shapes the narrative over the next 2 weeks in Omaha. And I'm very excited to see that. I know Dave and Joe are as well. So I would encourage you all to make sure you are following our work over at baseballamerica.com over the next 2 weeks. There will be plenty there coming from the College World Series. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Dave is at Dave Serrano 11. And Joe is Joe_on_sports. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the podcast. I do not know when we are going to record the next one. It may be in Omaha. It may not be. I'm not entirely sure of the schedule. So if you're subscribed, though, you don't have to worry about it when we record. It'll show up on your favorite podcast app on your phone. So make sure you're subscribed. And while you're there, you can if you can rate and review us, that we appreciate that as well, because it helps other people to find the podcast. So we're excited for the next 2 weeks. I hope you guys are as well, and that you'll be following along over at baseballamerica.com and the various other channels to which we publish things. When we come to you next, like I said, I'm not sure, but we'll have plenty more to talk about then. So until then, thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave. Thank you to Joe. I've been Teddy Cahill. We'll see you next time.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.